First, though, spirit in a rather wider sense. John Micklethwaite, editor of The Economist, and in a new book, argues that God is back. The Enlightenment philosophers and scientists looked forward to a withering of religion, but in fact, around the world, the opposite is happening. Given that Britain is always said to be one of the most secular countries and the most secular part of the world, John, just give us some of the, as it were, the statistical underpinning for the assertion that God is back.
Well, I think for us it was a surprise as well. I think very much I was brought up in the Western European idea that the more modern a place got, the more secular it was going to get. But actually, if you look back, there's always been two sides of the story. There was the European side, which was one where, as you got more modern, faith got pushed out. But in America very much, particularly since the Revolution, when they divided church from state, there religion has done well. But what was really interesting was actually wandering around the world. You go to places like China and you see religion bounding ahead, suddenly out of virtually nothing, or Africa or Latin America. And the more we look around the world, the more we began to think, actually, most of the evidence seems to show that actually Western Europe is the exception, not the rule.
There's a story here, and you do start the book very interestingly with this small Chinese church, one of very, very many. And if there's a single brand of religion, if I can put it that way, which seems to be doing better than any others, it's Pentecostalism. It's Christian Pentecostalism, which is exactly what, or roughly
Pentecostalism is basically very charismatic Christianity. And what's interesting is it was started in Los Angeles, in the back streets of Los Angeles, by a one-eyed guy. It's now probably the most anti-intellectual religion.
When did it start?
I think 1910, roughly.
Right, yeah.
And by the end of the century, it had close to 500 million charismatic converts of one sort or another. And what's interesting about Pentecostalism is the way that it's spread. I mean, it went from America pretty much outside. Now it's coming back into America, in some ways exported by people like the Koreans and the Latin Americans, bringing it back again. And it's a particularly emotional religion. I went to go and watch an exorcism in the San Paolo church. And what is strange is to watch lots of sort of middle-class housewives coming in with their children, parking the children to one side, then going through complete agony and ecstasy, in almost sort of like a medical way being administered by the pastor. And at the end, they pick up their children, the laundry, and wander off back home.
And Pentecostalism, in particular, it's spreading in Europe a bit. It's certainly spreading across Africa, China, South America, as well as North America. You say at one point, it's the sort of, if you could bottle the essence of the American religious way, then this is what it would be.
It is. I mean, what's interesting about America is you go back and you look at America before the Revolution. Everyone always has this vision that America was founded by pilgrims. Well, it was. But straight after the pilgrims, a lot of less sort of wholesome sorts were sent there. And just before the Revolution, America wasn't actually that different in religiousness to the way we are. I mean, Salem, the place which Arthur Miller put in the
witch
crucible.
Trials, yes.
80% of the households there, really quite quickly, were irreligious, didn't claim any form of religious identification. What's interesting about America is it really took off after the Revolution. And the reason, we think, is the Constitution. The Constitution separated church from state, and that made it imperative for people to go out and compete for souls. It was the advent, really, of pluralism. And the first people to do that were the Methodists. The Methodists showed up just after the Revolution, converted an eighth of the country in close to 50 years. And that type of pattern has relentlessly happened in America.
So are you describing, in a sense, spiritual capitalism or the spread of the spiritual market?
I think there's an element of that. I mean, you could argue, at one point we make the argument there are two texts you need to understand the way in which religion is going. One is the American Constitution, which you separate church from state, and the other is Adam Smith. Because Adam Smith actually pointed out that if you have an established clergy, they're not going to fight as hard as people who have to go out and sort of eat what they kill, if you can use another analogy.
A lot of people looking at religion around the world will say, well, hold on a minute. I mean, the really big story is Islam. And you make the point, perhaps not unfamiliar, that rejection of aspects of Western modernism has fueled Islam as well as the politics. But what I was going to ask is, does the rise in Christianity around the world have anything to do with the rise in Islam, or is this a clash of civilizations, as Samuel Huntington
would say? It does in some places. It's interesting. Britain, I think, there seems some polling evidence that where you have big Muslim minorities coming in, people re-identify themselves as Christians to some extent, much more than they would otherwise. But in general, I think they're slightly separate. They are driven by some of the same ideas. There are bits in Islam which are quite competitive. You have mosques which are a little bit like fundamentalist preachers. They're preaching against each other. But on the whole, we tend to take the argument that actually It's Christianity, which will probably now do better because it has been through this process of kind of dealing with modernity under various forms. And it was, you know, to us, it was generally surprising. We come from a secular background on the whole.
Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that God is back? It's quite difficult. I was trying to trace the tone in your book, and you, for instance, you give people like Richard Dawkins a bit of a belting or root, and I wonder
why.
Didn't.
Well, actually, Dawkins, we tried desperately not to deal with the big issues about is God good? Does God exist? We don't. We merely take the arguments about whether the basic fact seems to be
that
man is a
book rather than
man
polemical.
Is a theotropic creature, and you have to deal with the consequences. And the consequences are mixed. We have great chapters on wars of religion there. And if you go to somewhere like northern Nigeria and you sit there and you see, on the one hand, fundamentalist Christianity being fueled largely by American collection plate money pushing northwards. And then you also see Islam largely fueled by Saudi money pushing southwards.
Yeah.
You know, 30,000 people have died there in the past 20 years just in pure kind of religious violence. So it's very difficult to claim that religion... This return of religion is per se a wonderful thing. But having said that, there are lots of areas where religious people do things which are amazingly good. We went to Philadelphia. There was one of the great statistics we found is that close to $1 billion worth of social services are provided by religious people of one sort or another.
Yes. And just before we open this up, why were all the Enlightenment philosophers and the scientists and the rationalists so wrong when they predicted a withering of religion? You say man is a theotropic creature.
I think they were wrong to this extent. I think at the time they saw religion, or certainly the European ones did, the early Americans, even then there was a difficulty in it. They saw religion as tied up with the Ancien Régime, which is completely understandable. If you're in France, the church and the state were so closely allied that when you overthrew the state, you tried to take the church out as well. In America, it was always a much more competitive environment. I think they made what one of the sociologists calls a category mistake. People thought that modernity equals secularization. And in fact, modernity equals pluralism. And pluralism, I should stress, includes the possibility for people to say, I don't want any religion at all.
Yes. Maggie G.
I think the way you talk about religion is rather extraordinary, actually. I wonder how Archbishop Rowan Williams would react to your prescription for the Church of England, which is that it should become a more competitive outfit and it should focus single-mindedly on spreading the Anglican faith, because I think the best argument for religion is not that it propagates itself, but that it makes people happier in some cases and it makes them kinder, and that it makes them, say, help the poor and the sick. And this, to me, is an argument from within religion.
I think that's a very interesting point, and I think that's one which actually, if Williams was here, he would make. I've seen him, and he tends to stress the good things that churches do rather than the numbers. You can read the numbers to him, and I wouldn't claim he doesn't care about it, but it isn't the main thing which matters to him. And I think what you're saying is correct. What gives people that urge to go and be religious? I mean, a good example in a weird way is Barack Obama. I know whenever people think about American religion, they think about George Bush. Look at Barack Obama. There was a young, vaguely mixed up, very clever guy who went to a Chicago church and found, for better or worse, some form of meaning. And that, I think, is a big attraction of religion at the moment.
There's also a problem about linking it to business when business is doing very badly here and anything to do with money is not going well. We haven't got any. The MPs have got it all.
We've been talking a lot about America. So bring in, with Robert Shiller, an American perspective on this.
Yeah, you presented this as American way becoming dominant in the world. But I'm wondering if this is really a change that will continue indefinitely, or is this part of a cycle? I'm reminded of Robert Fogel's book, The Fourth Great Awakening, and he claims that there have been four major religious awakenings, the first in the 1700s, and he seems to describe it as a cycle, that it reaches a peak and then it subsides.
It's definitely, the American system has definitely got cycles, and you can argue that there's a very good argument which you're alluding to about the idea that a particular wave that began in the 60s is sort of reaching its end. But what happens is after each one it ebbs a bit, but then it tends to come back again. And that, I think, is the system. It's the system whereby religions replace each other. I talked about Methodists being first. You then had the Baptists came in. The Catholics, actually, in America were incredibly competitive. They went out and sort of tried to convert people in a way which they didn't necessarily try as hard to do in Europe. And more recently, you've had the Pentecostalists, and no doubt there'll be other ones. And what's interesting about that model is that, you know, it is spreading. If you look at other places, you look at Latin America, used to just be a Catholic stronghold. Now you've got the Pentecostals with, and I apologize.
There is a kind of historical advance, but absolutely not the one that the Enlightenment predicted. Richard Eyre.